Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson. How's the tan, Sophia?
Well, your tan?
Yeah.
Am I meant to be spotting one? You're not exactly glowing.
I think I definitely sprouted a few more freckles. I like to think I've got a pinkish hue on my forehead, my expansive forehead. No?
Not as spectacular as was expected, given where you've been this week.
Yeah, I've been a literal solar panel out in Saudi Arabia for a few days. So we were out there on the Red Sea coast, where they are trying to change the world. It's quite amazing what's going on over in on the Saudi Peninsula. So we were over there to talk various things, mainly about, you know, super yachting in the Red Sea and the potential of it. But just before we arrived, they'd done this big launch for the Line. So if you don't know about the Line, I urge you to Google it. It's something like out of an Isaac Asimov novel. It's just incredible. So it's 170 kilometer long, 500 meter high, 200 meter wide, continuous skyscraper. If that makes some kind of sense. It's quite hard to picture.
Yeah, I can't even. I mean, I've seen obviously the renderings and things that have been in the press, but I just can't really get my head around it.
No, that's the wild. Nor can I. And it's the remarkable thing about it, really. So it's enormous. It's taller than the Empire State Building. It's covered in reflective glass, and it's just this. It is literally a line. It's just this narrow, kind of linear city running 170 kilometers from the coast into the mountains and further into the desert. It's going to cost something like $1 trillion, and it's built entirely around walking and public transport fundamentally. So the concept is this, basically. So most old cities are designed around the means of transport available at their founding, which was typically the horse and cart, and, you know, people just got around by foot. And it's often led to narrow, winding streets and quite, you know, densely packed, slightly unformulaic in some cases, routes around the city. Then when the motor car was invented, new cities were founded around that. So you think of the huge sprawling suburbs of American cities. They were built entirely around the concept that petrol was dirt cheap and plentiful. So of course, you just drove everywhere. So this is the first attempt to create, the first attempt I can think of to create an entirely new city from scratch, not around the motor car. There'll be no roads, no cars. So it's built around public transport and it's vertical, walkable neighborhoods. So they reckon you'll be able to travel the entire length of the line in 20 minutes. I think the technology is maglev, and the whole thing will be powered by renewables. It'll be a vertical garden city and home to 9 million people.
Wow. I mean, it just sounds like something out of a futuristic novel, doesn't it? It's quite a long way from Milton Keynes, which is the equivalent of a British city that was built from scratch.
Yeah, we know concrete cows in the line. I'm not doing it justice. But go and have a look at the website, and you kind of think, how is this even possible? But you talk to the people out there; they're like, "That's it. No, it's happening. It's absolutely happening." And the amount of digging equipment and you know, these big camps for everyone working out there, these kind of camps in the middle of the desert are huge and vast, because there's, you know, thousands and thousands of, you know, expat workers out there now as well, all contributing to this particular giga project and a lot of the others that are out there. But my first thought seeing the line was the windage of this thing is going to be insane, because there's some really strong breezes that barrel through that region. But I'm hoping someone's considered that.
Hope so. I mean, if not, offer your consultancy, Stuart.
I'm not sure my consultancy expertise would extend much beyond this has got a lot of windage, this thing. So get someone much cleverer than me to figure this out. So anyway, we weren't there for the line, obviously. It was just coincidental that they had done this big launch as we were arriving. Look, they really want the Red Sea to be a new super yachting destination. And some super yachts have discovered it and discovered the Red Sea coast of Saudi Arabia. And there's a lot more there than I had originally thought. The mountains are quite dramatic and lovely, and there's some lovely wadis and some cultural sites, and Ulula. There's a place called Ulula, which is a beautiful area, and yeah, there's quite a lot happening. So yeah, it's one of those places you kind of got to keep an eye on over the next few years, because the developments and the news are going to come thick and fast.
This was your second time you visited, right?
Yeah, I was there as part of a kind of a Vanguard press trip, I suppose, in October or November. I can't quite remember. It was towards the end of last year. So they built this kind of camp in the desert to kind of introduce the NEOM concept to a bunch of travel operators and a few journalists. So NEOM is this kind of, you know, almost a kind of special economic zone within Saudi Arabia on the western coast. It's a vast area. It's the size of Belgium or something. And a lot of these kind of giga projects will be in NEOM. But it's all of it, the line, Sindala Island, you know, these big industrial zones they're building all the way down that coast. It's kind of hard to wrap your head around. But actually being there certainly helped me get a better grip on the ambition of the whole thing.
Well, yeah, it sounds pretty amazing. I struggle to believe, you know, again, looking at the renderings and looking at all the different projects out there, I struggle to believe that they will happen. But as you say, I guess when you're on the ground, you really get the sense that they will.
Yeah, it certainly is. So anyway, so while I was layering on the Factor 50 out in Saudi Arabia, don't go in July if, like me, you're bald, pale and have freckles. you've been monitoring the news around Axioma. So what's the latest on the auction of this yacht?
So yeah, we've known this was coming for a while, but we haven't been able to report on it, but we finally have this week. So yeah, the popular charter yacht's going to be put up for auction on August the 23rd after she was arrested at the end of March as the result of sanctions against Russia. So she'll be the first Russian-owned super yacht to be listed for sale since the economic sanctions were introduced earlier this year. But it's a slightly different case to some of the other yachts that have been seized or frozen that we've spoken about before on the podcast, because it's understood that she's being auctioned as a result of a loan violation, which has arisen because the yacht's owner has been added to the European list of sanctioned individuals, and he therefore isn't able to fulfill his loan against the yacht. It's interesting. I think I've seen a couple of nationals kind of hint at the idea that this might set a kind of precedent for the other yachts that have been seized or frozen. And I don't actually think this is the case, because it's based around a loan default rather than the owner being specifically sanctioned. There's no reserve price set, so there's potentially going to be a bargain out there. I know the yacht quite well, because she obviously did the charter beat for so long, and she, you know, she had a great captain and crew on board. One of her captains joined one of our webinars back during COVID. There was a famous Miba show party once where everyone ended up in the pool, not me, I'd like to add at this point. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who buys her and whether she goes back on the charter market, because she has been a spectacularly successful charter yacht over the years.
Someone was telling me, maybe it was even you, I can't remember, I was talking about Axioma unrelated to this, about the charter capability and just outright excellence of this yacht. The crew are so honed and so good on the service front and anticipating guests' needs. Someone told me it was just a level above every other charter yacht on the water. They were just absolutely mint quality.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely what she's been known for, you know, kind of putting together anything charter related over the past, yeah, you know, 5 years. If you wanted someone to comment, you would try and speak to Axioma, because they, you know, they were the best at doing spectacular themed parties or treasure hunts, or, you know, they just had so much in their arsenal for those charters, and that was really what the yacht was set up for. And before all this happened as well, they did announce at Monaco last year they were going to build a kind of support vessel to run alongside her, so that they essentially could expand the program even further. That obviously is now not going to come to fruition, but yeah, they were really trying to push the boundaries of what was possible on the charter market.
So I was speaking to Chris Hesselwright for one of our big boat interviews a couple of weeks ago, and he actually said, well, I put it to him that there's been a lot of chat in the industry about people, you know, who would be mad enough, I think that was my question, to pick up one of these seized Russian assets. And he said it's not a problem at all. Actually, there's some great buying opportunities going to be out there. And I think this is going to be one, especially given Axioma's charter pedigree. So when's the auction again? August 23rd. No reserve. Yes. Interesting.
Yeah. Interested?
Well, chuck in. We can do a whip round at Bet International. See if we get a few hundred quid together. We'll see.
Yeah, we might struggle with the running costs post that, but we can deal with that further down the line.
But as ever, as that story develops, we'll obviously keep you up to date on boatinternational.com. But it did give us an opportunity to talk about some of the other big super yacht auctions that have happened over the years. And I've picked out three. The first one I selected was 95-meter Indian Empress, which is now called H. She was put up for auction in Malta in 2018 following claims its crew were owed more than $1 million in unpaid wages. She was auctioned and the hammer came down at 43.5 million euros, but the buyer then failed to pay in time. So the presiding judge just let it go for 35 million euros to a company called Sea Beauty Yachting Limited. So just before it was due to go up for a second auction, the judge let it be sold to this company called Sea Beauty Yachting. Interestingly, the boat was briefly called Neom before the name was changed again to H. But 35 million euros for 95-meter Indian Empress, I thought was an incredibly good price, considering she was just fresh from a refit too. Mark Berryman did a big refit on the interior, and they were looking very, very good indeed, at least in the pictures that I saw. I think he did a great job. He's very good at that kind of natural, tactile, comfortable interior, Mark. And she was looking pretty schmick. So
she's private now, though, isn't she?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I think she is. I'll have to double check. I'll frantically Google. You carry on with the next one.
Okay. Yeah, with 35 million euros for 95 meter boat, fresh from refit. Yeah, good value. So then there was 91.5 meter Tranquility, formerly known as Equanimity, obviously. This was, of course, the yacht ordered by Jolo, who for a few years managed to convince the world that he was a Malaysian billionaire. I urge you to read the book Billion Dollar Whale, which I did a few years ago. It's a fascinating tale. It documents Jolo's rise and fall. It makes for some pretty wild reading. So it was seized in 2018 and Burgess managed the yacht's auction. A company called Genting Malaysia made a successful $126 million bid and the yacht was renamed to Tranquility. Interestingly, she's now for sale again. She's actually a really lovely boat. I had a look a few years ago when she was at the Monaco Yacht Show. She's well put together. And then one of my favourite auction stories is that of Titania, the 73-metre Lursen. She's now owned by John Cordwell, a British billionaire who bought her at auction for a song, it turns out. He got it for 33.75 million euros. The auction took place at the Ritz-Carlton in Grand Cayman, and John was the only bidder actually physically present in the room. He was up against a number of unknown telephone bidders. But I interviewed John on the boat a few years ago, and I remember him telling me his overwhelming sense on winning the auction was sadness. He felt guilty, he said, for getting such a big volume pedigreed Lursen for that price. I mean, she'd been around the world. She'd done everything. Because he had gotten to know Dave Ritchie, the former owner, who owned an auction house, a well-known auction house. And John had gotten to quite like him. So he walked away after only paying 33.75 million euros, feeling a touch guilty.
How long did the guilt last? Had he gotten over it by the time you were interviewing him?
I'm sure he got over it pretty quickly. But he then went on and extended her. She's now 73 meters. She was 67, I think, when he picked her up. Again, she's a very successful charter boat. She does very well indeed.
My frantic Googling has revealed that H is currently just privately used.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just to confirm.
Some quality frantic Googling. Well done. And you've been on the hunt for some bargains, haven't you? So in case our bid on Axioma fails, you've got some backups.
Yeah, my backups are slightly on the smaller scale than Axioma or any of the other yachts we've discussed. But I found a couple which I think are bargains with quite a bit of character to them, which is why they stuck out to me. So the first one that caught my eye on a boat's yacht listings was the 28-meter De Vrouw Christina. I'm sure I've butchered that name as usual. Can you correct my Dutch pronunciation, Stuart?
I don't know what the right answer is, but I'm going to go for De Vrouw.
Okay, yeah, yours sounded better than mine. Either way,
De Vrouw Christina.
She was delivered by FedShip in 1957, and she was inspired by a traditional Dutch barge. And she's the only vessel of her kind to have been built by the award-winning yard. This is perhaps with good reason. If you take a look at her, she might not necessarily be to everyone's taste, but she's certainly an interesting-looking yacht. She was originally commissioned for Crawford Fairley, the well-known medicine professor from New England. And then she went on to be owned by the trucking entrepreneur, James Ryder. And then she had another owner with, which amazingly, she did six Atlantic crossings with, because when you look at her, you might almost mistake her for kind of a houseboat. But yeah, she is more than capable. And in recent years, she's been cruising in Alaska, South America, and New England, and she's had extensive refits in 2002 and 2017. She's got three cabins, space for six guests, and a crew of three, and she's asking just 1.25 million euros. She's for sale with campers, and yeah, give you a chance to be an owner of an owner in the FedShip Heritage Fleet.
She's definitely a singular FedShip, isn't she?
I mean, she doesn't scream FedShip when you look at her.
No, she is quite unique. She's been on the boat show circuit she's done a few boat shows. I've definitely seen her.
Yeah, I think she was at some of the US boat shows a couple of years ago. I imagine maybe when she first went on the market.
I feel like I've seen her in Palm Beach. A very classic looking. You see these kind of barges on the Dutch waterways in Amsterdam and other places. So this is just the super scaled up, super yacht version of that concept. I think she looks really cool. Big, heavy, capable boats, these. They don't, no nonsense, Dutch barge. So, 1.25 million. It's probably more than we could afford. We'll keep an eye on that one. She's been on the market for a little while, hasn't she?
I think so, yeah. I haven't actually looked when she first came on the market, but I think so. And then the other one that I picked out was, she's technically slightly under a super yacht. She's 23 metres, Frederikstad. The yacht was commissioned as a lifeboat in 1968. And then in 1996, she was purchased by Peter de Savary, friend of Boat International and, of course, of America's Cup fame. And he stripped the boat back to her bare frames and did a major restoration and refit that transformed her into a yacht. Since then, she's undergone numerous other refits. She's got accommodation for eight guests. Looking at her interior, she's very much got a kind of gentleman's club vibe. But she's on the market for just €850,000 with Fraser. Stu, I know you went on De Savary's houseboat a couple of years ago, but have you been on board this yacht?
Never been on board Frederikstad, but I remember him telling me all about it. He's a great character, Peter. He's owned about a million boats.
Yeah.
So you're right. Yeah, I did interview him on Savvy, his houseboat, those wistful pre-pandemic times. And we made a great video of him, actually. There's a really good video of him on our website, on board the boat, talking about Savvy, the Hackvoort barge, which he has since sold. I recommend you going to see it. We'll put a link to the interview in the description. But Frederikstad is such a happy-looking boat, isn't she? A jaunty, upright tug, kind of go anywhere, do anything. Chugger, big fan. He actually converted it. Peter de Savary converted it in a shipyard he owned in Penzance, and he sold it late in New York. He said he hung a big for sale sign on the side of it, which was big enough to be seen by all the rich bankers in Manhattan skyscrapers. And arch entrepreneur that he is, it actually worked, and he sold the boat.
I hadn't heard that story before. That is a great story. I've come across Peter more from my travelers today's, because he obviously owns a lovely hotel in Grenada, and then he also owns a lovely hotel on the south coast as well. So yeah, I've been fortunate enough to stay at a couple of his properties, but yeah, like his boats, they're numerous as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just got, you just sit with him and he just tells the craziest stories, and they're all absolutely true. That's perhaps the most wild thing about it. He's just got 1,000 anecdotes and 1,000 stories, and they're all brilliant. I mean, he's lived 1,000 lives, that guy. Here's to 1,000 more, because he's a genuinely, genuinely fascinating gent to sit with for a few hours and talk through some of his boats and some of his stories. Before we get to the news, we have the very, very sad duty to report that Dick Mulder, the managing director of the Dutch shipyard Mulder, has passed away. I'd like to extend, on behalf of everyone at Bode International, our sincere condolences to the Mulder family and the shipyard. Dick built the shipyard. I think he took it over. I read in the story there was just one employee when he took control of the shipyard and built it into a really pedigreed builder of steel, Dutch, very, very high quality boats. So Dick's son, commercial director Nick, said, "It is with great sadness that I announce the passing of Dick Mulder, the second generation of Mulder Shipyard, and above all, my dear and respected father. It has been a privilege and an honour working alongside him and playing a part in helping to establish the iconic brand which Mulder is today." Nick added that it would be his relentless devotion to continue improving the Mulder quality that will continue to define our company culture in the future. Speaking on behalf of all Mulder employees, Nick said that we are grateful for Dick's leadership, advice and friendship, and we will always remember him. There's actually a lovely photo of the Mulder team holding up a sign saying, "Thank you, Dick," from the bow of the yard's latest launch, 36-meter Soulmates. The shipyard has been in amazing form in the last few years and has built some really quality yachts. That's really down to Dick's drive and determination. He's a huge loss to our industry, but the yard is in very good hands with Nick, who's just a brilliant guy. So obviously very sad news, and our thoughts are with the whole Mulder team at the moment. So let's talk some news. Sophia, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I'll kick us off with the news that the new line of cruiser racing sailing yachts has been revealed by Wally. The Italian shipyard has revealed a new line of lightweight carbon fibre cruiser racer sailing yachts called Wally Wind. Comprising of three new models, the line includes a 33.5-metre 110, a 39.6-metre 130 and a 45-metre 150 model. Marrying classic Wally style with exceptional performance thanks to their lightweight construction, Wally predicts that the new models will set new standards for carbon fibre sailing yachts. Construction on the first Wally Wind 110 has already begun and the new super yacht is set to hit the water in May 2024. Naval architecture on the 110 comes from German studio Udo Wollick & Co., a studio that is responsible, of course, for some of the fastest sailing yachts on the water today, including 44.6-metre Path and 55-metre Pink Gin. With the entry-level model already in the works, there's, of course, also the 130 and then the line's flagship, which will be the Wally Wind 150. Wally's managing director, Stefano DeVivo, said the 130 and 150 are clearly for owners who wish to take long cruises in any sea in the world on a boat that offers not only comfort and a high degree of service, but also exceptional performance.
Very exciting to see this new line of Wally yachts. They look great as well, obviously Bassani influenced. So, not long to wait for the first one, right, Sophia?
Yeah, May 2024 should be on the water.
Okay, so that means we've got to get her into the September 2024 issue of the magazine.
There you go, pencil. Life under sail, perfect.
We'll make a note. Next up, we have the news that the 40-metre custom superyacht Ayşe has begun construction in Turkey at the Anadolu shipyard near Istanbul, which is better known for its military vessels. The all-aluminium superyacht has been conceived by Red Yacht Design and will be built for an involved client with delivery expected in 2024. The yacht will feature exterior and interior design by Red Yacht Design, with naval architecture also by Red in collaboration with Nautilus Engineering, while project management will be overseen by Turkish firm Eureka Yachts. The design phase took 9 months, with the owner outlining a brief for substantial interior volume without compromising on performance. That is the ultimate wish of all owners nowadays. One of the owner's specific requests included a galley that connected to the main social area so that the family can cook while on board. I want to see more of this, actually, social cooking on board superyachts. The Goga, the cover boat of our September issue, Paolo Vitelli obviously designed the first one for himself, and he made sure there was a family cooking station on the main deck because he likes to cook pasta for himself and his family and not have to get it from a galley in the bowels of the boat. So he wanted an open cooking station, basically, so he can stand there in very Italian style, talking loudly with his family and cooking pasta. I love that idea.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of an anomaly in the yachting industry, isn't it? Is that when we look at houses and things at the moment, obviously the trend is all for these big open plan kitchens. And the same even if you're looking at a beautiful holiday villa or something like that. So it's not surprising that some owners also want to see that on their yachts. I can understand why.
Well, it's been common in the American market for years and years. The country kitchen has been a staple of American yacht design in about this 40-metre length for ages. I mean, the galley is an open space for family gatherings, for, you know, open cooking, for cooking displays, and there's, you know, the dining area forward. I love the concept. And I think we'll probably see more of it as the kind of that trend from residential design, and more residential designers get into yacht design, and the kind of that bleeds through. I'm all for it. I am all for it.
I wonder how yacht chefs feel about it.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure some of the language I've heard over the years from yacht chefs would work so well in an open plan galley.
Well, you've got to have two. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that, like, Golga is a great example. You've got like the slightly more informal cooking station up, and then like the proper, slightly more commercial grade one downstairs. On a lot of those American boats, there's obviously, there's only one galley and it's open. So you've got to have a fairly convivial, you know, sociable chef. So you choose your chef wisely, I think, if you have a country kitchen. That's the secret.
There we go. Sound advice from Stuart. So finally, to keep you happy, you're tired after a long flight. Catamaran Corner.
Yay!
Silver Yachts has marked a new chapter with the launch of the 36-metre Space Cat. The 36-metre superyacht hit the water at the yard's facilities on the Pearl River Delta of the Guangdong province in southern China, and the yacht is now undertaking sea trials with delivery expected next month. The yacht features exterior design by, of course, acclaimed designer Espen Bueno, and has previously described by Space Cat as a bold undertaking. Well, the bold design seems to have paid off, as Silver Yachts has also announced that the series will be expanded with an entry-level 22-metre model and a mid-level 24 model. A second 36-metre is also being built on spec at the moment. Silver Yachts is obviously more traditionally known for its slender hulls, and the Space Cat is the Australian shipyard's first venture into multi-hull design. With a 13.3-metre beam, the yacht will offer around 300 square metres of interior space and 575 square metres on deck. Speaking about it previously, Espen said, the fact that you're combining two hulls gives you an incredible opportunity to create a lot of living space. So yeah, I think we've discussed this before, but I think Espen's another member of Catamaran Corner with you, Stu. He loves them.
Yeah, he's drunk the Catamaran Kool-Aid as well. So he's fully committed to the philosophy. We're on the same side on this debate, Espen and I. Two hulls are better than one. Simple as that.
Well, this story this week segues nicely into the data, which as ever is brought to you by BoatPro, Boat's award-winning market intelligence service, because we're focusing on multi-hulls.
About time, too.
So some top line numbers for you. There's 200 multi-hulls on the water, which means they make up just 1.7% of the global fleet. 99 of these are motor yachts and 101 are sailing yachts. The unusual looking 88-metre Sea and Lady, which I think we've discussed on the pod before, because her design's actually based on an outrigger canoe. She really is quite a strange looking yacht. But she also owns the title of the largest multi-hull in the world. She's followed by the 84-metre trimaran White Rabbit, which was built by Echo Yachts. Stu, didn't you fly to Australia to see her kind of pre-COVID?
Yeah, it was one of the madder trips of the international. I flew to Western Australia for 36 hours to see this boat. Talk about jet lag, my God, it knocked me for six. So, yeah, flew in to Perth, went down to Henderson, met up with the Echo guys, had a look at the boat, had a sleep, got back on a plane and came home. But it's kind of outrageous when you think about it, but it was the only opportunity to see the boat before it was handed over. There was no guarantees we were going to get a look at it after that. So this was our only and best opportunity to get on board. And it's so important. I think that's what sets a lot of our boat features apart, is the fact that we go to crazy lengths to get writers on board the boats, because it makes such a difference in your impressions of the boat and your impressions of the quality and the layout, the flow, the design, the philosophy, everything. You have to see it firsthand to really convey in the writing, what it's like. Simple as that. So, yeah, our travel budget is crazy, including mad dashes to Australia for 36 hours to go and see White Rabbit. But it had to be done.
Interestingly, the third, fourth and fifth ones are actually giant support vessels all built by Shadow Cats. So Hodor, Wayfinder and Nebula. And Nebula, I think, is actually going to be one of our yacht reports for the October issues. Is that right, Stuart?
That's right. I'm trying to hustle it into the October issue. So Laura from the team went and saw her in Barcelona. She's the support to Moonrise, the big Fed ship. The Cat platform makes a lot of sense for to act as a support boat, because just the carrying capacity alone. Hodor as well. I mean, you look at what she can pack on. It's incredible. Like, go fast boats, subs, a million jet skis, the works. Nebula looks equally as cool. I haven't seen any interior pictures yet, but I understand it's very, very cool. So I'm quite keen to see those.
I've seen a few just taken on Laura's iPhone, but yeah, it is quite cool. And Hodor, interestingly, is one of our best performing yacht reports ever online. I think that's slightly also due to the Game of Thrones reference, but people are fascinated by what she can offer. Anyway, it would appear that a majority of people have your way of thinking. So of the multi-hull fleet, by far and away the most are catamarans, so they represent 92%. Looking ahead to the global order book as well, this only seems a trend that's set to continue. So in 2021, there were 29 multi-hulls under construction, and by 2022, this had jumped to 43. We all know that the global order book had record-breaking numbers in terms of build last year, but this also still saw a percentage increase from 3.5% to 4.2%. And I saw a story this week from our sister publication, IBI, and they've been visiting Sunreef. And the news coming out there is that they currently have 36 yachts in build, which just seems like a huge number. And this, of course, comes hot on the heels of the brand's announcement last week that they're opening a new shipyard in the UAE. With Sunreef producing numbers like that, that there are that percentage of the fleet is definitely going to grow.
Yeah, Sunreef, I mean, they've been responsible more than most in recent years for the growth of this market. They've really found a very, very happy niche in the catamaran space. And they're selling bucket loads of them, which is great.
And we've actually got a feature on kind of the rise of the catamarans and some of the exciting projects that are forthcoming, which is in our September issue that has just gone to press, or went to press yesterday.
It's actually in the October issue, which we're working on now. So Sam Fortescue put that one together for us. Look, I mean, we've done features on catamarans before, but I think it's time to focus again, just given the fact that, I mean, the numbers are stark, aren't they? So 29 in build in the 2021 global order book, and that jumped to 43 in the 2022 global order book. This is a trend, like Explorer Yachts, that is accelerating at considerable pace. So it's right that we spend a bit of time dwelling on it. So Sam just digs a bit further into the market. Yeah, looks at some of the most exciting new projects, a few of the slightly more out there concepts as well. And it's just a good fun read. Yeah, check it out in the October issue. Don't miss it.
Okay, even more catamarans for you, Stuart.
Never enough. Trimarans as well. Very excited about trimarans.
Looking at your face, despite the glowing suntan, you do look quite tired. So I feel like maybe we should end it there and let you get some sleep.
Yeah, I'm knackered. I'm so bad at sleeping on aeroplanes. It's also from Riyadh. The flight time is not quite long enough to get a proper sleep. Not that I did sleep anyway. Toby, our CEO, was in the seat behind me. He was out before the plane even took off and woke up with about 5 minutes to go in the flight. I just don't know how he's done that. That's amazing. Anyway, I might go have a little lie down. Thank you very much for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was, as ever, mixed and produced by the wonderful Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time.